Blog Talk Radio.
Breaking rain. Thank you for that, Brother O. This is a product of Beverly Nation. This is Know Your Rights, and I'm your host, Terrence Strength. On air now, calling from Lagos, Nigeria. Calling family, 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation. This conversation was brought to you by them boys from Looking Glass Entertainment. And before I begin, I would like to thank Brother Oladeli and the O&E Dynasty family for giving me the opportunity to share my story and my perspective. The topic tonight is spirituality, a new perspective. Tonight we have two important guests on tonight. We're sharing an evening with Sergeant L.J. Caver and Sergeant Carol Russell. So we're going to get into tonight. Getting in balance is not so much about adopting new strategies to change your behaviors as it is about realigning yourself and all of your thoughts so as to create a balance between what you desire and how you conduct your daily life, how you conduct your life on a daily basis. And that was written by Wayne Dyer. So I just want to talk briefly, trying to get everybody here on time on this thing. I want to talk briefly a little bit. Of course, in 3 days, we're going to celebrate Christmas. I want to wish everyone happy holidays, happy New Year's, Kwanzaa, I believe Hanukkah maybe. Just make sure you guys be safe out here. I see we have the vaccines out. People are taking vaccines. You still got to wear your mask. You still have to be vigilant, even with those things, if you decide to go that route. And you need to really be very careful about going that route. So I just want to say, be vigilant, family. It has been quite a year. We've had it all this year, it feels like. And I just pray for a much better 2021. That's all I want to say about that. We don't want to waste any more time. We want to get into this topic. So I want to make sure, Carol, are you... Sergeant Russell, are you there?
I am, sir. Good evening. How are you? And that's retired
I'm doing
Sergeant
great.
Carol Russell.
Yes, retired Sergeant Carol Russell. I'm glad you're here. Retired
yes,
Sergeant
sir. Thank
LJ.
You for having me.
Yes. Thank you for coming on the Know Your Rights show. Sergeant LJ Caver, retired LJ Caver, are you present?
Yes, I am, and God is good. Thank you for having me, brother.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm glad you guys made it. That's a good start. You wonder, Brother O, doing that. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, hello. And by the way, the sister has done good. That's a retired director of Carol.
We're going to put that out there. That's another line on the resume, brother.
That's all right, sis. You got that.
Former acting police director. Yes, sir.
That's all right. You got
that. I see you two are primed and ready to go. All right, so that's good. That's good.
Okay.
That's good. I see your son Josh is on Facebook Live, so I see the family support, Kay. Bye. All right, so very, very quickly, family, everyone knows Cave is my brother-in-law. He married my sister. God help him. My sister. And he's obviously a good brother. He's obviously a patient brother. So you definitely want to hear his perspective tonight. Brother O, I want to thank you for that track. It was fitting. All right, so let's get started. So I'm gonna start with Kate because I know Carol. I know Sergeant Russell. I know she's gonna go in. So let me start with Kate.
Russell. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, Kate. A little bit. What do you want the
O&E
family to know about yourself?
It was quite peculiar, seeing that I grew up in what is known as the hood. in the project, you know, you grow up in the hood and become a police officer. See,
okay.
You know how that is, because they, you know, they said, well, wait a minute, you know everything about us. You gonna come in and then come in and then lock us up? Well, no, that wasn't my position. But I grew up in the hood, and I've become well known to the community.
Right.
And I tell you, it's quite an experience living as a person of the community, and also now you have to be one that helps to chastise them. It's quite a quite an experience. I've been there, and so I've been through. I've worked for the police department for the past 25 years. I'm retired now. I've been retired now for the past 7 years. I've been blessed by the Almighty. I've been blessed. So I've learned quite a few things about us and the system in and of itself. So I'm not one to brag on myself. But I've been a few steps in this life. I can tell you that.
All right,
been a few steps in this life.
Okay, well, we're going to talk to you tonight about what you learned from the system. You're going to share that with our family tonight. All right? Let me get the sergeant Russell with me and have her tell a little bit about herself. Sergeant Russell?
Yes, sir. Yes. Well, again, thank you for having me on. To all of your listeners, I am Carol Russell. I am a native of North Jersey, actually migrated to Trenton, came to Trenton in, I'm going to be telling my age, in like 1976. and just became a product of Trenton, which I am proud of, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I initially attended Mercer County College. Majoring in, ironically, mortuary science it was at the time, changed over to funeral service. And then I switched over to criminal justice.
Okay.
I got hired by the state. It was the Division of Motor Vehicles at the time, which is now Motor Vehicle Commission. And
mm-hmm.
I stayed there. I enlisted into the United States Air Force. I did 6 years there. Left the Air Force, went back to motor vehicle, and remained there until I was sworn in with the Trenton Police Department. So I came through
okay.
the police department. I did several years under the direction of the late Chief Ernest A. Williams, who was the first African-American police chief in Trenton. And I was assigned mm-hmm. to community relations with him. I started out in patrol, and then I went to community relations, crime prevention division. I also worked in the schools in the city of Trenton as a school resource officer, teaching pre-K through fifth grade, stranger danger, and also certified DARE and GREAT instructor, which was, of course, the DARE program was with the drugs. And the GREAT program is an acronym for Gang Resistance Education and Training. I taught the kids sixth grade through 12th. The perils of being involved in drugs and gangs. And then I went back to patrol, eventually got assigned to internal affairs under the direction of former police director Joseph Santiago, who I believe was the best thing since sliced bread for the Trenton Police Department. And, of course, you know,
okay.
there we investigate our own, any complaints that come citizens concerning their encounters with police officers. I was in internal affairs for about 3 years. Until one of my greatest hurdles and achievements of getting promoted to sergeant, again, under the direction of Director Santiago, where I remained there until my retirement in August of 2010. So, yes, sir.
Okay, so LJ was talking a little bit about you becoming an interim director or something like that. Can you just talk briefly about that?
Yes. In October of 2018, the present mayor, now of Trenton, Mayor Reed Gassiora, reached out to me to come down for an interview. He was looking for what he wanted was a African-American female to be the police director. My
wow.
name was My name was put out there. He called me. I had less than 24 hours to get ready for an interview. Went to Trenton for the interview, and next thing I knew, in about 3 to 4 days, I was sitting in the director's complex as the acting police director for the city of Trenton.
And again, as
Brother Cave spoke about, it was an experience, you know, being a police officer within that department and then going back into the department as a police director. You need to know that Cave and I were not silent walkers, okay? We made a lot of noise when we were there at that Trenton Police Department. So what that tells you is, what do they say? We know where all the lies are buried. And you do know when you know a lot, people don't really want you around. So that speaks for itself. But it was an experience, and it was a very good experience. And I can appreciate having sat in that seat for the time that I did. I learned a lot.
Okay. That's outstanding. All right, so we're going to go in a little bit right now. So I'm just going to, you guys know what questions I'm going to ask you guys. So in your estimation, I'm going to start with LJ, with Sergeant Caver. In your estimation, what is going on with the police and the people of color in this country? What's going on?
In my estimation, I think we done just plumb lost our minds, first of all, and I'm looking at what in the world is going on. You know, what is it that we expect? What's going on, brother? I think there's a lack of communication. I know there's a lack of communication. There's no interaction between the community and the police department. Because the police department has to become a part of the community, not an occupying force. And unfortunately, especially in communities of color, there's a view of the police as an occupying force. You don't have little Johnny wanting to be a police officer, or little Debbie saying, "Well, can I be a police officer?" You're having them. Well, who are those people that are standing there with guns and uniforms, and they're not interacting with us? And it doesn't mean that. And I'm not expecting officers to do that, but there's just a lack of communication and association between the community and the police department, as I see it. That's just touching on the subject, just brushing on it.
Okay. All right. And Sergeant Russell, what is your perspective of that question? Like, what do you think is going on with the people, with the police and the people of color in this country? What's your perspective on that?
Well, I can definitely say, you know, depending on race, people have different relationships with the police. Black people, research has found, and this is really coming from Pew Research Center, 70% of black people have said they believe that black people were treated less fairly by the police. But then you have on the other side, our white counterparts, only about 37% felt that black people were treated less fairly than white people were. So there you have that huge disconnect, right?
Yeah.
I can speak personally about the disconnect that I knew of in my own municipality when I worked with the Trenton Police Department. And I think there was a need to have a more community policing approach. You have to think about, in policing, it's a relationship. We have to think about being in the building relationship business. Policing communities is about getting up close and personal with the people that you're providing a service to. Now, Kay can attest to this. When we would sit down and talk to our white counterparts about, you know, having that better relationship, trying to bridge that gap between the community and the police, we told them, we are public servants. We provide a service to the public. They told us flat out to our face, we're not no public servant. And to me, that let me know really how you felt about policing our community. So I want to go into what one of the police directors, was a former police director of the Trenton Police Department that came in prior to Director Santiago, and his name was James Golden. James Golden and George Clisby, and they both went out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
James Golden had came to us. He was also a director in Saginaw, Michigan. And he talked about and implemented what we call the One Cop, One Neighborhood. And I was an officer who was a part of that One Cop, One Neighborhood. And I thought, for me personally, it was awesome. They had certain particular officers who would police a neighborhood, and that was your beat. Nowhere else in the city, you stayed just in a particular region in that community. And what that did was that enabled you to really build a relationship with the people in that particular sector. They got to know you. They knew you by name. I took it upon myself to get out of my police car, walk the street, every alley, knock on doors, make myself known, let the people in the community and in that particular neighborhood know, I am Officer Carol Russell. I am going to be policing your neighborhood for the next 6 months or a year or however long I'm stationed here. I'll be your officer. And honestly, I did build that relationship with that community. And I think that's what we need to get back to. As Cade spoke about, that occupying force, you don't want to come into communities, any community, any neighborhood, like this occupying force and acting with brute force. Let's build this relationship. Let me get to know you and you get to know me. And especially if the officer or the community, we don't look like one another.
Our
folklores and our what we do, our cultures are very different. Let's learn about one another, not have this separation. Tell me, how do you get to know somebody? It's summertime. You have your windows up, air conditioned blowing, radio on. I'm talking as a police officer, and you ride through a neighborhood, and I'm going to go back culturally. My parents are from the South. And do you know what we did in the South? We sat on porches, right? We sat on the porch. Anybody drove by, what did we do? We waved.
Mm-hmm.
How do you ride down the street and people are sitting out on their porches and you don't even look in their direction? You're just riding by, just riding through, not even looking. The kids are waving at you. You don't even wave. So where's the gap? There is a definite gap between the community and the police. And what we have to really do, we have to work hard at bridging that gap to build a better relationship. Because police have to realize something. They need the community more than they think they do.
That's right.
You need the community to be your eyes and your ears, because we can't. It's more of the community than it is of police.
That's right.
And they will work for you if you work for and with them. And all people want to do is be treated like they should be treated.
Thank you. I think we have a caller in the queue, Sergeant Russell. Caller one, who am I speaking with?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Peace and blessings?
Yes. Sister Bessie.
Hi.
How are you doing this evening?
All right, and hello to your guest.
Hello, how are you, sis?
Hello, ma'am. How are you?
Hi. I'm loving the show, and it's about time. This is really done, so to hear the officer's point of view. I have a couple of questions, and hopefully I can have some answers from you both.
Okay.
It's all right? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
The first one I wanted to ask was, why are there so many Caucasian police in the black community? Is there a Is there a shortage of police, black police officers on the force for the black community?
Ooh, I wish we was having an in-person, in-person forum right about now. Well, is it Miss Bessie? Am I speaking with?
Yes. Miss Bessie.
Yes. Okay, Miss Bessie, let me just tell you in the municipality that retired Sergeant Caver and myself worked in, we both actually went to civil service in the state of New Jersey. Our organization did. Brother Caver was the president. And we went to the commissioner of the Civil Service Commission just with that subject that you just asked. And we were trying to make mandates of officers. If you're going to come into our communities, you don't live here. We were trying to make a mandate for you to have to live here. You know, it's almost like you bidding for a house, you bid higher. So when it comes down, it kind of meets what you really want. So if you're trying to sell your house for $500,000, let's put it up to $700,000. And if I get five, I'm good, because that's what I was asking for. I want anyway. So we were asking, we want you to be here at least 7 years. So we said, how about 10 years? And maybe we could get seven or even five. They didn't even want to entertain it. Because what we saw was, I think you would have a greater interest in what goes on in this community if you and your family, be it your wife, significant other, whatever gender, and your children lived in this community. But when you don't live in the community, you come in, you do your work, and then all we see is your taillight going out to the township or down into South Jersey. I don't feel that you have the genuine interest of the people that live here or what goes on here, because a lot of it, it's not affecting you or your family. So that really is civil service. Because I can say for sure, in Trenton, New Jersey, the only city workers that are mandated to live in the city for 15 years before they can move are the civilian city workers. Fire and police were exempt. And you say more of us. Well, I think a lot of us don't want to become police officers. And again, these were conversations that I and I know Sergeant Caver have had personally with when we would walk our beats and we talked to young people and we would try to encourage them and recruit them to come on. They were very disinterested in being police officers because of the hand that they have been dealt by law enforcement. And I'll let Sergeant Caver say more.
Well, just to add on to that, sis, that as you said, the number of us being on as police officers or in the career, which is a very good career, why do you think that there are so many of them on it? It pays well. There's good benefits, but you got to remember something: how it initially started with our community. The police department was not a part of the community. It was a part, but it was used as, shall we say, yard dogs to keep certain things in line. And what took place was we weren't allowed to. We really didn't. Well, I can't say this. We did have black officers on the police force, and that's because of certain laws that were put in place. But to have children interested and to have our community interested in our tool, which is what a community service is, which is what the police department is, it's a community tool, then that tool should be used to make the community interested in them. If the police department and other civil service physicians are not actively involved in trying to make the community a part of them, then what happens is now they become viewed as an occupying force. And now, what happens is now you have our children and the next generation of people saying, well, listen, I don't even want to be a part of this because
part of that.
My family has no, we don't even like these people technically being here in our community doing to us what they want, and then there's no accountability to us. So when we start talking about why there are so many of them, and this is nothing against our white brothers and sisters that are on there, it's just that that's how it started. The police department started like that. It was them coming in. And so when they got justified, shall we say, a lot of us didn't want anything to do with it. So now it's our obligation, since we have to understand that they are our servants. They are our tools. But as Sister Carol said, you know, they have a different attitude of being a public servant.
Yes.
For you to serve someone, that's actually belittling yourself as a person. That's how they view it. That's why they don't take themselves as a public servant. I'm a civil servant, they call themselves, but being a public servant, no, I don't serve them. What I do is I give them a service. But the issue is they have a different view of what they're doing within our community, because what they do in our community, many of them wouldn't dare allow us to do it within their community. And they know it.
Right.
And that, but their community wouldn't allow what they do in their community, because they have to answer to that community. So there has to be a change. Now, why there are so many? Well, it's a good paying job, and they don't have to answer to anybody. And guess what? They do what they do, and they leave, and guess that's it. Then they come back in and do it again. You don't see them no more until the next day, until their next shift. So that's why it started off with them being the majority of the people working in our communities, and that's what we got used to. So now what has to happen is that now we have to change our mind.
Well, thank you for that response. Sister Bessie, do you have any more questions quickly? So moving? Okay, one more very quickly.
Yes, I do. Why has the police forces gotten so militarized in the last decade?
Very quickly, YouTube, if you don't mind. We got more callers in the queue. Thank you.
I know. We, Sister Bessie, really not stumping us, but and that is about that occupying force that we talk about. You know, they're coming in with that brute force.
Mm-hmm.
It's like dehumanizing us. Like you want to roll over us with tanks.
Yes.
It's we don't see you.
Gotcha. Is that good, Mr. Bessie?
And you have to also realize
I don't
want to
take up too much time on the air, but we can discuss this further.
Thank you so much. I'm in support of you. Thank you so much for coming on Terrence's show. And thank you, Terrence, for doing this. Peace and blessings
to
both of you.
Thank you, ma'am. And likewise. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Call in, family, 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation. Brought to you by Looking Glass Entertainment. Okay, I think we have another caller in the queue. Caller, who am I speaking with?
Hey, this is Angela calling from Myrtle Beach. I just wanted to call in. Oh, I'm sorry.
Hey, Commissioner.
I'm sorry. How y'all doing tonight? This is
an
amazing show. I thank you for this show, and I thank you for your guests. I thank you guys for your service. I thank you for what you have done. And thanks, Sister Bessie, for calling in. She had some amazing questions, so I thank you. I'm just glad for this show tonight. I don't have a lot to say. I'm just excited that people actually getting to hear from police officers exactly what's going on in our community. But how can we make a difference? How can we change this? What can we do as the community? That's the question I'm asking the community, those that are listening. So while they continue to listen, I want them to think about what can they do to change this perspective. And thank you for the show, Terrence.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for calling in. He said she's our commissioner. Caller, I think we have another caller. Caller three. Caller three, who am I speaking with?
Chris, it's Jerry Petito. How are you?
Hall of Famer. How are you doing, Jerry?
I'm good, sweetheart. So first I want to say hello to your guests and to you. You know, I live in the Trenton area, actually, Robbinsville, New Jersey. And I have a lot of family and friends, officers and detectives in Trenton and in Robbinsville. My cousin is actually the chief of police in Robbinsville.
Okay.
And, you know, I just want to say that I want to thank you guys for your service, first of all, because to me, you guys put your lives every day on the line. And,
absolutely.
You know, I remember, you know, growing up and thinking I wouldn't mind my child being an officer, you know. Not today. Not today. My grandson is 19, and I wouldn't want him to be one. And it's heartbreaking because I carry around these little prayers. They're called policemen's prayers, and I laminated them, and I have them in my wallet. And I'll go up to officers in parking lots, and they'll look at me at first, like I'll pull my car up to them if they're sitting in a parking lot, and I'll hand them one. And then all of a sudden they're like, wow, thank you so much, because you guys need prayer. And, you know, I just want to thank you for this show tonight. I mean, what you're saying is incredible. And, you know, well, that's what I want to say to your guests. Okay, so thank you for that. But, Terrence, I have something I would also like to say to you. Are you sitting down?
Yep, I am.
So, Terrence, I want to congratulate you. 2020 O&E Syndicated Station Linear New Host of the Year. The broadcasting pop star, baby. That's what you are. Tara Strength on your O&E syndicated station, all-time connection record with your 28th, man, all-time and 27th consecutive. Get out of here. Number one all-time in the O&E Hall of Champions. Are you kidding me?
Wow. Well, that's my congratulations.
Congratulations, Brother Tara.
Yes. Congratulations. Thank
you. You get there, yes.
Are you kidding me?
Wow, thank you,
Terrence,
thank you, Jerry.
You're awesome, man.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and
thank you
for the show tonight. And again, thank you for your service to your guests. God bless you all.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Thank you, sis. Thank you very much.
Okay, she didn't hear me.
Oh,
all
I'm
right.
Sorry, what, Tara?
Right. I said tell everyone when your show is. Your show.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
It's every fourth Tuesday night at 9:30, and it was this past week. I did two, so I'm so confused because I did a Saturday one, but I think it was this past Tuesday, and so it'll be 4 weeks from that, 9:30.
What is the name of your show? I'm sorry I missed.
That's okay, sweetie. It's the Jerry Petito Show.
Jerry Petito.
Is it G-E-R-I?
G-E-R-I-P-E-T-I-T-O, the Jerry Petito Show, yep.
Jerry Petito Show, okay.
Okay. And
all right, sweetie.
How did we get
one? Tuesday, same as what you did tonight on the
O&E.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
I get
thank
the information.
So
yeah, you can get the.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
All right. I think, Brother O, you have a track for us right now?
What you're gonna do when you grow up and have to face responsibility. Will you spend your days and nights in a pool room? Will you sell cats of madness to the neighborhood little ghetto boy? You already know. Pain and misery. Little ghetto boy, your daddy was blown away. He robbed that grocery store. Don't you know that was a sad, sad old day? All of your young life you've seen such a misery and pain. Oh, young man, and I'm going to go. Look out,
Okay, thanks for that, brother. Awesome song. Appreciate it. All right, so we want to keep this moving very quickly. So I just want to ask you too, getting back on point, give me your opinion of the fatal shooting of Walter Wallace Jr. That happened, I think, a month or two ago, whatever, and how it could, if possible, it could have been handled differently. LJ, give me your perspective on that.
But anytime you take a person's life and you can look them in the face and do it, that's not something easy to do, man. I mean, you know, my heart goes out to the family, but my heart goes out to those officers as well. That's that's you know we tend to trivialize taking a person's life with Hollywood and the video games and everything else, but taking a human's life is not very easy, at least not with me. That's just something that says that shouldn't be in you, but unfortunately you're given the authority to do it. But just looking at it, could it have been handled a different way? Well yes, it sure could have been. It could have been. That's you know, but when you're talking about now, here you are in a situation, and now you're facing someone that's coming towards you with a weapon, so to speak, and you're telling them to drop the weapon, and they just don't. You know, now could different things have happened? Yeah. In retrospect, you can always say this could have happened, this could have happened. But I look at the officer, and it's very, very, for me, it's very, very difficult to say, well, okay, now what do you do when you're telling them to drop the knife, and he won't drop the knife, and he keeps coming towards you or towards your partner? Now, what do you do? Now you know what you're trained to do and what you have the authority to do. Those steps, are you justified in doing it? And that's where it all comes down to. It all comes down to people in retrospect reviewing your actions under what is one of those situations where it can just tip or totter either way. Now I look at it as saying, well, they told him to stop. Could his mother have done something else? Yes. Were they justified? That's, you know, and I'm just looking at just being trained as an officer. Well, what do you do? Do you keep backing up? Do you keep saying, drop the knife? Do you keep saying, don't go towards my partner? What do you do? Now, you got seconds to make that. Then you got people yelling all around you, telling you what to do because they think they know what they think they want you to do. I'm looking at, it's a very, very questionable situation. But I see it. Now, they did tell him to drop the weapon. They told him to drop the weapon, and they fired. Unfortunately, that's the ending of it. Now, can they go back and go over and say, well, you could have did this? You could, yeah, they're going to do that because you took somebody's life. That's not easy to do. That's not, and I don't think we should ever trivialize it. But just looking at it, man, you know, I look at them as operating as officers. They didn't go there. You know, I can't say they went there looking to kill somebody. You know, but that just happened because you got to remember they went around the car a couple of times trying to back away from it. So I'm just sorry that it happened that way, bro. And you just can't say, well, were they right? Well, as looking as an officer, you can't say, yeah, they're justified. But looking as, you know, but that being your brother or that being your father, you know, what? No, they could have done this. Yeah, I know. But that's hard. That's a hard decision to make. You got 10 or 15 seconds to make that decision. So I'm not, you know, and the question is, well, why did he come out with the knife in the first place? That see, all of that, I say, bro, I can't. I give my judgment on it is that the officers, they were justified in what they were doing. Now, will they find it some other way? I don't know, bro. But that's a hard position to be in, because that little piece of steel can do a lot of damage to you, bro. And it only takes them a couple of seconds to cover several feet of several distance of feet. And I just, you know, it's just a shame that it had to happen like that. I'm sorry that it happened in front of his mother. That's just, you know. So I can only give that part as far as I'm looking at it. He forced it into another situation, man. And I'm just sorry that it happened like that.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for that. Sergeant Russell, what's your perspective of that situation?
Well, a few things. I can agree with just about everything that Brother Caver just said. You know, it's a couple of things. We discussed this. You know,
yes.
You talk about Monday morning quarterbacking, training, split second decisions. What do you do in the heat of the moment? You know, the shoulda, coulda, woulda. What were we trained to do? And when I say we, I'm talking police officers. So there's going to be times where more than others, that I'm going to speak like I am still a police officer, because, you know, they say it's in you, it's inbred. Once you've been trained, that's hard to get rid of. You know, what do we do first thing we get up in the morning? Our bodies have trained us. The first thing most of us do, we go to the bathroom, then we get up, we start brushing our teeth. You know, it's like we're on automatic, right? Same thing with police officers. And then I get to the piece of how imperative I feel that it is for officers to have mental health training.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to comment on something, you know, when you're not in the situation. We can stand back and we can watch the videos, and even someone from a window who's recording it, they're not in the situation.
Right.
And there's going to be times, even from our training, we miss or we don't miss. And what we are trained to do is we are trained and we are justified in elevating in our force.
Mm-hmm.
You meet force with the force, but we can elevate in force. So this young man had a knife. Now, it turned out it was a butter knife, but a butter knife can do damage. A butter knife can kill you. If it's given enough force from the other end and you're stabbed with it and it's hitting the right area, it could kill you. And then another question becomes, we don't know what may have triggered this young man, right? We don't know what was going on. And suppose he now all of a sudden turned on his mom, just say hypothetically, and maybe went to stab her. What would the public think about that if he did? And maybe the officers paused and didn't do anything. And what we are able to do legally and justifiably is to fire our firearm to preserve the life of another. So it's really hard. And I say, I don't like to Monday morning quarterback. And so everyone knows what that is, you know, talking about the shoulda, coulda, woulda, and couldn't they just shot him in the leg, and couldn't they use the taser? Well, everybody doesn't use tasers. Our department doesn't, the department I retired from, they don't use tasers.
Mm-hmm.
When we were on the job, we didn't even have body cameras.
That's right.
Our former department just recently implemented body cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Within the past, three years, I would say. Maybe 3 to 4 years, they just recently got body cameras. So, you know, it's difficult to say what the officers should have did. And I believe in the heat of the moment, in the situation that they were placed in, looking at what they had, they did training taught them to do.
Right.
And unfortunately, as Brother Kavis said, you know, it did take the life of this woman's son, and which is so tragic. And I just, in my mind, I can't stress enough how I just am really glad that it has come about that our New Jersey Attorney General has mandated that police departments in New Jersey give mental health training to their officers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sergeant Russell. I think we have another caller in the queue. Caller 4, who am I speaking with? Hello?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
What's your name?
Yes, my name is Brother.
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 Peace and blessings,
okay.
Cave and Cal.
Hey, brother.
Likewise, bruh. Good to hear from you, brother.
Right. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have two questions. The first one is, what impact do you think police unions play in the mindset and attitudes of police departments?
Mm. Mm.
You want to take this?
So you can take that one first, and then
saying that we were kicked out.
You know what? Let me just say this. I'm gonna kick you out there, brother. Brother Terrace.
Yes.
This young man that just called in. This young man, brother.
Mm-hmm.
He just asked the question about what impact do we think the police unions have, right? I think he knows very well, but that's a very good question. This brother worked with us for years. He was in our organization, very instrumental, very strong brother, community brother,
mm-hmm.
and excellent officer. He was a training officer in our academy, which is, I say there are two very important entities within a police department. And I think the most important entities in the police department, number one, is the police academy, because mm-hmm. that's inception. That's where everything starts for you to become a good and effective police officer in the police academy. That's where you get your training. And this brother was a training officer in our police academy. The next entity is internal affairs. Because that's where the discipline, if any complaints come in, let's see now how the discipline is and the disseminated and pushed out, and how the investigation goes, and does everyone get exonerated, or is every complaint not sustained? Very two important entities. And I just wanted to say that because this brother right here, he was at the top of the list. Excellent firearms instructor. He was at the top of the line in our department. So I thank him, first of all, for coming on. And to answer your question, yes, police unions have a very strong impact.
Okay.
Brother Caver, I can say that, and you can finish up. You may want this brother to come on your show at another time.
Yes, sir.
Brother Terrace.
Yes, sir.
You want this brother to come on and do some police training officer.
That's what he
is.
Yes. He's a police training officer. So and trust me, yes, he does. He knows. He knows those little intricate details of what.
Go ahead, Brother Caver.
Cave?
Okay, his line is still open. Brother
Caver? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I just wanted to say that this brother here, this is about trying to set the mold of the officers. That's what this brother here would be an excellent.
Okay. All right. Well, Kay, we're going to keep it moving right on because I have another caller in the queue.
Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me?
I can understand what you're talking.
He's cutting out.
Okay, I wonder what's going on. That's his phones. Okay. Hopefully you guys can hear me now, right?
Hear you now.
Okay. All right.
We're going to go to the next caller on the line right now, guys. Caller, you're on the line right now with Terrace Drunk and Know Your Rights right here at ONA.
Hello?
Okay, call us. There you go. All right, caller, you're on the line right now.
Yes, can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah, Brother Hooney? Brother Hooney?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Can you hear
me? How you doing? Yes.
I'm doing excellent, sir. Once again, congratulations, Mr. Pop Star. And much respect to your special guest, man. I always love your show. So let me get right to it. I got two questions. I don't know if I have time enough to answer. The first one is, why is it that the bad cops for some reason, can outdrive the good cop. Because every black man, woman, or child that gets killed is always blamed that the bad cop got there first. I have yet to see a good cop show up on the scene before the bad cop get there. Is there any way you could, y'all, either one of y'all can answer that for me?
Why do the bad cops outdrive the good cops?
Why is it? Yes, ma'am. Why is it that every black man, woman, or child that has got killed, you know, definitely over 400 years, but I'm going to bring it back down to recent, within the last 5 years. It's always the black cop, not the black cop, I'm going to deal with him in a moment, but the bad cop, for some reason, can get to the scene before the good cop. For the life of me, I cannot seem to make reason, since y'all, you know, working the police force, maybe y'all can answer this question that went unanswered for such a long time.
Can I first ask, may I ask you, do you want to name the town you're in that you're talking about? What town are you from?
Well, I live in good old Nashville, but I'm just saying everywhere throughout the United States of America, it's always a black. Okay, here's the scene. Let me paint a good cop, bad cop scene. I don't know if y'all are familiar with this story. There was a black woman, a melanated woman, that was fighting this heavyset white cop, the so-called good cop. Are y'all familiar with this one? I don't know exactly where it's at, but you can look it up online. It went viral. Okay? So here comes the so-called black cop, right? This dude looked like a former football player, a bodybuilder. He's going to come and catch this melanated woman by the blind side, right? He walks up on a sideswiper and hits her and knocks her out. That's the type of issues that we have with the so-called black cop. Because something like that happens, it's bad enough that the car can't see. They've been doing stuff and getting away with it for hundreds of years, and they got accustomed to doing that. They have yet to be reprimanded for it. Matter of fact, they can find 101, matter of fact, not even 100. They can find 1,000,001 excuses on why they do what they do, and they can get away with it. Okay, but I don't want to zone in on this good cop, bad cop thing. So the bad cop, in the image of the so-called black guy, he hits this melanated woman, sideswipes her, and knocks her out. I did not see the so-called good cop in the image of the Caucasian. He didn't reprimand the so-called black guy. He didn't arrest him. See, these are the type of issues that we are facing as melanated people, people that have been through hell and beyond. When you got a so-called black person or any image of us do that to a woman, a melanated woman, that possibly could have been his mother, could have been his grandmother, or wife, or sister, or aunt, or daughter. You get what I'm saying? Something is wrong with that picture. Something is really, really wrong with that picture. And I have not, you know, how I feel what should have been done to somebody like that in our hands. Bottom line is, thank you so much for coming on Terry Spence Show. But I definitely want to put that out there. The so-called good cop, bad cop, that's a perfect example. Look it up on the internet. It went viral. The so-called good cop did not reprimand this so-called black cop for what he did to this black woman. This guy was so big. If you take a look at him, he could have grabbed this woman. He could have grabbed her, came up there and knocked this woman out in front of the world, in front of our children, in front of our open enemies. The whole world was watching this.
Well, in that particular situation, I would like to see it before I even would comment on it. But what I can say in maybe any other instance like that, I feel sometimes we, and when I say we, I'm talking about officer of color, in order to possibly be accepted, we want to say, well, I can do it too, what you do. And our white counterpart will sit back and let us do it to our own people so they don't have to.
Move traumatically. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
If you can just understand what I'm saying to you, and we've seen it in the department we worked in. Like our people can be more brutal to us than our white counterparts.
Yes.
And our white counterparts will sit back and just let us brutalize our own, so they won't have to.
Mhm. Mhm.
And there are some in every department where there are both black, white, and others.
That's an excellent answer. What I want to do is I want to say what I got to say and put it on pause and listen to the rest of the show. And the last thing I want to say, there's no way in hell Caucasians would allow black men to shoot up a Caucasian men, women, and children and get away with it. If the shoe was on the other foot, this entire United States would be under a civil arrest, a state of emergency, and the whole world would have something to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I
thank you for your go ahead, LJ.
I didn't want to take up too much time, but I thought that that I heard that he said that she was fighting with another officer, and he came up and he assisted the officer. I feel like Director Russell, as she said, you know, we would have to see what took place, you know, because if she's fighting with an officer, another officers are going, they're going to come to assist the officer, whether she see them or not. The issue is, you know, how do we handle that situation? You know, do you arrest an officer right then and there on duty? You know, that's the type of things that the community has to get involved in. If they're going to try to set rules and regulations, then they're going to have to start meeting with their tools, and calling them to task, calling them to accountability. If that's what they want from their tools, that's what they're paid to do is service them. Part of that whole process.
And that too goes along with cops being misunderstood and
right.
The public not really knowing what our job really entails.
Right.
And then what Brother Caver was talking about too is we only see portion, when I say now I'm saying we, meaning the civilians, when we see little snippets on Facebook, we see the videos. We don't see the entire, I think probably the only entire video we saw entire was George Floyd and even Philando Castile being shot in his car in front of his fiance and his daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, and there could be more. There probably are more, but there's other things that precipitate. Even Eric Garner, really? You choked him and killed him for selling Lucy's? Like, you know, that's, for me, personally, it's beyond my comprehension. And we could go on and on and on. There are so many. We'd be on here all night. But again,
right.
I think, you know, policing is a thankless job. It really is. And I compare my whole entire career, and this is nothing against this other occupation I'm getting ready to name, because I have friends there, and they do awesome jobs because their job is just as dangerous as ours, or firefighters. But what we do see is no matter what the police do, no matter what we do, it gets scrutinized. You know, lately, especially around the holidays, police officers are trying, different municipalities are trying to reach out, and they're giving, instead of handing out tickets, I noticed one, they were handing out cards with $100 bills in them, you know, really trying to make people's day. They thought they were going to get a ticket. No, they got a card with a $100 bill in it. So, you know, almost, you know, trying to, especially around this time of the year, around the holidays. But those small snippets, one thing you do in your entire career will overshadow all the good that you ever did in your career.
Yes.
Right.
And the job becomes thankless, and I was going to say, to say firefighters, because what we do is we take people, we strip them from their freedom, we're running after them, we're chasing after them, and we lock people up, right? Firefighters, what do? They run into burning buildings and they save lives. Pretty much all the time. Which
right.
is needed. But policing is needed too. And there are multiple ways that we can do it so there is peace and cohesiveness within the community. And when I say I think it should be a stronger approach to community policing, building relationships with the people in the community, that does not mean take a soft approach on crime.
Right.
It doesn't mean that at all. Not in my book, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
We still got to fight crime. You got to still put the bad guy away. But even with putting the bad guy away, and Cave and I worked together doing that. He went out on a gun call. And over the radio, they're asking, dispatcher, where's our backup? No, nobody's available. Even the guy he was arresting said, man, that's really, and I'll say, not say the word, but he said, man, that's really effed up. They're not coming to back you up. Like, the criminal even saw that, but we still treated them with respect. We have to
right.
lock people up, but we don't have to dehumanize a person doing it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the sad
right.
part about it is it's really sad that you see George Floyd over what they said he was trying to pass a counterfeit. How do you know he knew the $20 bill was counterfeit and he lost his life over that? You don't have to dehumanize a person just because you're locking them up for anything. Even
right.
if it's a homicide.
Right.
You do your job, and it's not your job to induce the punishment. That's left up to the judicial system. We're there to apprehend and enforce the law.
Gotcha. Sergeant Russell, I want to thank you for that, for those comments. I think we have a track now from Brother O. Brother O. Thank you.
direct connection. They dig my directions. When people say that's okay, they don't bother me. I'm ready to make it. Don't care what the weather. Don't care about no trouble. Got myself together. I feel some kind of protection that's all around me.
Nice, brother. I think we have a caller six in the queue. Caller six, who am I speaking with?
Caller six on the line right now.
Hello?
Yes. Yes?
Hi. My name is Stephanie.
Oh, how are you doing? How are you doing, Miss Stephanie?
All right. I have quite a few questions, and I'm going to take my time and try to get to the things that I want to ask. Hopefully you can answer as many of them as they can. But first, I want to say that this is such an important opportunity for people in communities who have questions about policing to be able to speak directly to officers. And I'm just curious, from the officers' experience, how often does this get to happen? You know, we have this opportunity. The music is great, but I'm sure there's so many people that have questions. And it's, you know, this time is precious. So I'm thankful for this opportunity. I hope you can keep it moving with fewer commercials. But how often does this get to happen where people in the communities that are police actually get to speak with police officers and find out what their jobs are? And speaking to that, you know, the thing that has been going on in our community for several years now, these tragic incidents, it really does bring up in one's mind an issue of training. One of my burning questions, and the sister alluded to this in some of her comments, is do police officers receive marksman training? I mean, are you trained to shoot to kill, or are you trained to shoot in the area that will disable the offender and still allow them to go on and live? You know, why is it so often that a bullet is a tragic life-ending bullet? And thirdly, is the training ongoing? You know, are you all required, like teachers and other professionals are required, to update your training annually or periodically, you know, in a organized? And finally, you mentioned the mental health training. What is the mental health observations that are made of police officers, you know, from the beginning of their careers and throughout? Is there any periodic check on the mental health status of police officers? And not only that, sensitivity training and evaluation, racial, cultural and racial understanding, ethnic understanding within the communities that they serve. I know it's a lot. But these are the kinds of questions that have come up in my mind as a result of the things that we see going on.
Okay.
Well, with our training, we're both of us were in police departments in New Jersey. I think policing across the country is pretty much the same, but every state has their own guidelines, has, you know, a lot of different procedures, protocols, and our department and in the state of New Jersey, under the New Jersey Police Training Commission, you are obligated as a police officer to have firearms training twice a year. So two times out of the year, you have to go to the firing range and you have to qualify. And as far as, you know, you talked about, because I guess when officers shoot, it's usually fatal. Well, you asked, are we taught to shoot to kill? You're trained to stop the threat. And a lot of the times, the threat can be fatal, because where we shoot when we go to the range is in a Coke bottle scope. So if you have you ever seen a target that a police officer shoots is not just strictly round, like a round target, you know, with the lines till you get to the center dot. And you do shoot for center mass, but it's within a Coke bottle. So even if you don't hit center mass, if you got all headshots in that Coke bottle, you still qualify. If you can just visualize that and understand what I'm saying.
I mean, I would think that the training to create so regardless.
I'm sorry, I can't. Your phone is kind of really breaking up real bad. What are you saying?
I said I would think that the training would be to imbue accuracy, regardless of, you know, where you're aiming. And that's my question. What are you aiming? What are you trained to aim at? Are there targets within the human body that the police officers are trained to aim at, so as to, as you said, stop the target as opposed to killing the target? I'm just curious.
And the best I can tell you is if you can visualize, and we call it the Coke bottle. So how the shape of the bottle, or if you can, maybe the Coke bottle doesn't sound right, think of a bowling pin, right? It's kind of shaped like that. So it's almost like a human, maybe the head, shoulders, but it's square, and then it's cut off at the torso.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
And then within the torso is a round, is a target, like the round circles of the target, the lines keep going till you get to the actual center mass, and then there's a dot. So within that lining, you have to get all your shots, which will qualify an officer. So anywhere within that that diagram, anywhere within it, not outside the line, but within, you're good. Be it the head, be it the neck, be it center, mm-hmm. be it the chest, the abdomen, anywhere in that area, you're good. And anywhere within those areas, it can be fatal, because that's where all your major organs are. In the head is your brain. You know, you have the jugular vein in the neck. Then you have everything else, your heart, your lungs, and every other major organ within the area of your torso. So if a bullet, and you have to understand, too, most law enforcement officers, and this is not giving away any information because you can always look it up, but we use a particular bullet, and only police officers are allowed to possess those bullets. And they're called hollow points. And those bullets do damage once they're ejected out of the chamber of the gun and they hit a target. And that's usually what causes the fatality, because it really they really tear up your inner organs.
So what you're saying is that there is no protocol for aiming at, let's say, the lower limbs to just stop.
Mm. Not with our training, no.
Interesting.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was going to go somewhere, but I won't go there.
See,
you know, let me just say this to the young lady respectfully, and that's I kind of went off a little bit in when Brother Cable was talking about the public misunderstanding or not understanding the deeper part of what police officers are trained in and what their job really, really entails. Because just listening to you and asking the questions, and your questions that you're asking are very legit. They're very legitimate questions, and they're good questions because you don't know the deeper part in the nomenclature of what we do as police officers. And the most interesting thing is to become a police officer, and I think that would give you or anyone else a greater understanding of what we do, how we do it, and why we do it. And that in our training is what would give you the understanding of all that. And there becomes the important piece that I'm sure we don't have time for tonight, but the recruitment of bringing just more of us and more females into policing. Mm. That's another whole piece that I am so interested in, but we really need to get more females into law enforcement, into policing, and especially females of color.
Got you. Wow, that's really powerful, Carol. I want to get you to, I'm trying to wrap up the show, I want to get your final thoughts very quickly. We can go into the Ngozi time. Caber, just very quickly, what are your final thoughts? What do you want to leave with us about this topic?
Well, this topic, just quickly, I would say this much. If we're planning on making any type of influence on the police departments, it has to come from within the community. The community has to understand and take the mindset that the police department, our servants, they're our tools. And if anything, have them answerable to you. If there's nothing but meeting them once every quarter of the year to report to a community-based organization that says, listen, what are the police doing here within this community? We're getting complaints about the police here. You're not doing this in this area. Make them answerable to you. They work for the community. And stop being afraid and being the enemy of the police department. Because that means also when they need your help, you got to give them your help as well. Because as Director Russell said before, she said that, listen, the police aren't out there. We don't see everything and hear everything and know everything. Yeah, you let the prison mind tell you that you're a snitch. But in the meantime, they'll sell your daughters and your sons and everything else. They'll sell them the poison, and they'll addict them to that foolishness. But in the meantime, if you're going to sit there and let that happen and they're not going to be answerable to you, then what you're going to have is what you have now. So either you're going to have to take the attitude that, listen, we want to talk to the police department, and we are demanding that they talk to us so that now they can give us an answer for their actions.
All right. So we need to be more assertive. Okay, Sergeant Russell, very quickly, just to wrap up, your final thoughts,
sir,
on this topic.
My final thoughts is I want to leave you with a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. And to our officers, all officers, and to our community, those things that matter, and I'm adding on to the quote, and these are thoughts in my mind, our lives matter, our children's lives matter, our education, our health and well-being, our public safety, and our quality of life. You know, there are times in our lives that we see things that we cannot and should not turn a blind eye to. So when we are seeing unjust acts being committed upon people that you know in your gut is not right, and you stand by and you remain mute, your silence is a confirmation of consent. So if you see something, you got to do something,
You have to say something. And his brother Cavert, I thought he just had read my little notes. We have to get away from that no snitch rule. Stop teaching our kids, don't say anything, don't snitch. We got to get away from that rule. And we have to really become more connected to our community. And the community has to reach out. We have to extend that olive branch. The police department has to extend the olive branch. And we have to be willing to extend our arms to reach out so we can make this connection and build and bridge that gap that so exists between the community and the police. And I thank you, brother, for having us on. I appreciate it. Thank you.
That was well said, both of you. And I think it's in Gozy time now, Brother O.
No, he always says he thinks. You already know it's in Gozy time, Tara Strength. He's funny, LJ and Carol. Anyway, thank you guys for being able to come on and expound about, you know, what goes on with your lives and what you have done. You know, a lot of
thank
times people want to hear that other side. That's what broadcasting is all about. I will never apologize for the sides. If you didn't like it, that's on you. If you like it, it's on you. This is broadcasting at its finest. And Orny Dynasty is fantastic. Tomorrow night on these Orny stations, we come back with the outstanding intern, Lena Blue. So we're going to wake that goddess, y'all, on the Orny syndicated station intern host show. Tomorrow night, 9:30 Eastern Standard Time on these Orny stations. And, of course, Better Nation is advertising to O&E, which is Oladeli and Gozy Enterprise Reaches, of course, at www.lookingglassentertainment.wordpress.com, as well as, and Gozy, time at, of course, listen, I want to say something to all you guys tonight before going to Gozy time. We as a community must do better, okay? They broke the no snitch rule. We have murders in our community every single night. All around the world, not just America. And we allow it. We go into our homes and allow it. How dare you? How dare you be a punk? You're afraid to go to the corner store because you allow these things to happen and no one speaks up. Do you know where your children are right now? I've been saying this for almost 8 years. Do you know where your children are right now? And charity starts at home, guys. If your home is not right, the next door neighbor is not going to be right. Your block and your community is not going to be right. Let's get it together, okay? Let's start saving lives by saving our own. And now to business, okay? Better Nation is advertising to O&E, which is on the Dolly and Gozy Enterprise, reaching the course at www.lookingglassentertainment.wordpress.com, as well as in Gozy Prime Time. Why not? BetterNation.com. We're in Gozy Time, both on Twitter and Instagram. On the Dolly and Gozy at Pinterest and Google Plus. Hello, Beverly Malou, and go to your Facebook as well as our business page. Know Your Rights, as well as the historic Beverly Nation Online Radio, established 2013. Any comments, suggestions to our wonderful program tonight? Oh, Lay Day Lay. Donnie goes with mine, gmail.com, and I am your mother and father's favorite producer, Hello, Beverly Malou, and go to saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Force Radio that support us on a constant basis. If you don't like what I said, you can ear numb me, because guess what? I'm not here to be liked. And you know you love me. Anyway, congratulations to Tara Strength on something that has not ever been done in other broadcasting companies as well as our own. 28 all-time connection records here at Orny Dynasty, and something that only 5 people share in the world. This man has consecutively garnered 27 straight. That is something that is amazing to all of you. But not amazing to the host family on it. Every single host is devastating to your ear. Because I said so. And now, back to the pop star himself. Tara Strength, you have 2 minutes left to go in this program. And like I said before, if you don't like what I said, that's fine. Because you're going to listen to Orny anyway. Because we're here.
Carol. I want you to talk about your panel discussion that you're going to have in February very quickly, please.
Yes, very quickly. The New Jersey Alliance of Family Support Organizations, based out of New Jersey, we are having a webinar The background is law enforcement, mental health, and social justice. We will be talking about mental health and law enforcement, how we provide families with resources on where they can get identification cards for their youth, ensuring families to know that they can register their youth on special needs registry with the municipality. The next webinar is what to do when having encounters with police officers. The third webinar will be Take a Walk in My Shoes. And then the very last webinar will be called The Talk. The first webinar is February the 2nd, 2021. The second webinar will be February the 9th. Third webinar will be March 2nd. And the fourth and final webinar will be March 9th. All four webinars will start at 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. And to register for the webinar, you can email me, and I'll give you my email address, all lowercase, at crussell@fsofrank-union.org. That's crussell@fso-union.org. Or info@njfamilyalliance.org. Again, that's info@njfamilyalliance.org.
Outstanding. And you're going to be on that panel with the commissioner, the Philadelphia commissioner, chief of police.
Philadelphia sheriff, yes, Rochelle Bilal. She is the first African-American female sheriff in the history of the Philadelphia Sheriff Department.
Okay, outstanding. All right, well, I want to thank you, Sergeant Russell, and